Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, we'll have Jason LaCafora from CBS at the bottom of the hour talk about the NFL draft. First of all, our play-by-play call of the day. The Sixers secure the third spot in the NBA East.
Fultz giving it up. Holmes laying it in. That'll be assist number 10. Is there a rebound in the house for Markelle Fultz?
There it is.
Going for it. Yes!
There it is.
A triple-double off the bench for Markelle Fultz, and he's going to be fouled by his teammates.
You couldn't ask for a better end to a season individually or collectively. Look at the backup who's lost his minutes. He's the one insisting the crowd give Markelle his love.
Mark Zumoff, and Mark guest lectured in my class once. He's awesome. Great guy. And Ala Abdelnaby, NBC Sports Philadelphia, Markelle Fultz, first career triple-double. Now let's get into the significance of the win last night. And here's the significance of it. By winning last night, the Sixers made themselves the third seed in the NBA East. That means if they get through the first round of the playoffs, they would get to the conference semifinals. And if they do, instead of facing Toronto as the four seed, they will face the Celtics as the third seed. And the Celtics, it doesn't take a genius to know that the Celtics are a shell of themselves right now. Kyrie Irving is out for the playoffs. Marcus Smart's been hurt. They haven't had Gordon Hayward all year. With Irving and everyone healthy outside of Hayward, the Celtics probably beat the Sixers in six games. No Irving. Smart, I mentioned, has been hurt. And, of course, no Hayward, who hasn't been there all year. The Sixers probably beat the Celtics in four or five games. So finishing third was really important for them. To finish third, and again, it means a matchup in the second round. If they win the first round, it means a matchup in the second round with the Celtics, a shell of themselves, instead of Toronto. Now, next year, the Celtics are going to be a real force, and so will Philadelphia, because the Celtics are going to get both Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving back. It's like getting two first-round picks. It's like when the Sixers this year got back Ben Simmons. So, obviously, terrific finish by the Sixers. Terrific season. I think they're now in good shape moving forward. I think, again, winning last night was really important for them, because I felt that by getting the third seed, it opened the door to giving them a much easier negotiated path to the conference final.
I would think if there's one team, one dangerous team, that the rest of the league would not want to face for sure, it'd be Philadelphia.
You know what? If Embiid is healthy and rolling, absolutely.
How about Embiid and the Stars last night, not even making, the first 80 points the Sixers played, and none of their huge stars were involved in the offense. I mean, that is scary good.
Yeah, and that's what they've become. I'll tell you, the guy I'm happy for is Brett Brown. As you know on the show, how many times have I said on the show over the years that, like, I said, look, the one area where I think they've got the right guy is Brett Brown. Well, now you look at him go out there, and Brett Brown, now he has some legitimate big-time talent around him, is showing that he is a legitimate big-time coach.
I think the one team in the Eastern Conference is the one that's I have a hard time figuring out is Washington. I mean, they go to Toronto in the year. They beat them twice in Toronto, but then not too long ago, they take on Cleveland. They were up late, something like 17, 18 points with barely a quarter to go in the game, and you know, they pretty much just stand around, and LeBron brings his team back, and they win. It's just such an up-and-down team. Can't figure them out.
No, nobody can figure them out. I'll say this. I've watched Toronto play a little bit, and Toronto's really good. I give them a lot of credit. They are very good. You know, it was really odd last night, though. What was really odd last night was what was the game last night? It was going to be, obviously,
the play-in game.
Minnesota-Denver game.
Yeah.
It wasn't on. That game went overtime, too. It was a really good game. That game wasn't on last night. How could that game not be on?
I think it was on, like, Fox Sports North.
Yeah, well, it probably was on Fox Sports North, but I'm telling you, it wasn't on here. Fox Sports North.
I did flip on ESPN last night after the after Penn's Flyers were done. I flipped over to ESPN to see if they had that game on, and they didn't. But they were in between games, and I think they were going to Utah Portland, and they were killing time, and they were running a portion of the Minnesota game last night.
Yeah, but they should have shown the game in its entirety.
Yeah, they just did like a live look in of the overtime.
I mean, I don't understand. How can you pay $1.4 billion and you finally get to the last night with a game with some chops and you don't show the game?
Actually, ESPN had Philly and Milwaukee on last night. I mean, I had two channels with that game on last night. I was surprised ESPN didn't have it blacked out and you'd go to an alternative game.
Yeah, I don't know. How do you pay $1.4 billion? And you finally get like, hey, look, we're going to have a meaningful end-of-the-season game here. All right. And we can't show it. Okay. Well, yeah, that's... it's an interesting ride over there right now. So... And we were talking about the morning show earlier. Again, there's something that, and again, the show is still in its infancy, so it's still trying to get its legs. Every once in a while, it takes a little while for maybe something to get its legs, you know, and then finally gets going and hits stride and get, you know. So they're not there yet, but at least initially, it just seems like something is missing with that show. And then I watched last night, you've been throwing the NBA down my throat for how many years now because you paid $1.4 billion a year to carry it. So the last 3 years, it's been NBA, NBA, NBA. You finally get a game with chops at the end of the season on your night to show it, Wednesday. No. We're going to show you Portland and Utah. Really? We're going to see Portland and Utah? I looked at that and said, who's running this thing? Oh,
so you'll get a laugh out of this. You know, we'll steer from ESPN and we'll talk about NBC. Did you know some of the Stanley Cup games are going to air on Golf Channel?
Yes, because and the reason why is because NBC owns Golf Channel.
Correct.
All right, so that's the reason why. Just like, I can't believe they're showing Stanley Cup games on Golf Channel. Yeah, but they're also showing them on CNBC too. Okay, so all those people going over there to see, okay, what's the Nikkei doing right now? Oh, look, the Kings are winning 2-1. And also USA. USA is showing some Stanley Cup games.
Well, I guess they don't want to take the shows off MSNBC. I guess they want to keep the normal... news talk shows.
Yeah,
you'd think they would. Yeah, I guess they want to. They don't want to bump the news talk shows on MSNBC. You know, for we don't want Fox News to win. We don't want them to win.
Oh yeah, no, it's They can mention Trump's name 8 times and get ratings. I got it. Okay.
You know, it's like, oh, the one time we aired a hockey game on MSNBC was that one time that President Trump, it was that one tweet. It was that one time he tweeted out when we were running a hockey game. We couldn't. Where's Chris Matthews when we need him?
Oh, man.
We could add Brian Williams on the 11. What's that 11 o'clock show that he runs? He does an 11 o'clock show now on MSNBC.
I think it's called the 11th hour.
The 11th hour. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We got Lawrence. What do we need that for?
That's right.
We have Lawrence.
Yeah.
We think we do.
We do.
Let's see. Now, Jason Lecafour is coming up, bottom of the hour. We're going to talk about the NFL draft. Okay. But Pete Prisco put out his piece. And best player. Let's see. How does he call this? I've got to read through this just to make sure I got it right. He says, over the years, he has put together his NFL 2018 NFL draft better than team. 20 guys I like more than the scouts do. Okay. Says, yes, he missed on Christian Ponder. He says, but he hit on Jason Pierre-Paul, Benny Logan, Lavonte David, Grady Jarrett, David Johnson, Travis Kelce, Dak Prescott, Deion Jones, okay, and Yannick Ngakoue. Okay, so here's his first guy, and I will absolutely, now some of these guys I've seen in person, Ronald Jones, running back USC. I want to tell you right now, I agree with Pete Prisco completely. Every time I saw Ronald Jones obviously a lot on tape, and obviously I saw him in person. I really like him as a running back. Right? He is explosive. He gets to holes. Whoever drafts him is going to get a good player. Dante Pettis of Washington. All right. Now, let me get to, as a punt returner, and you didn't really see it, Gilligan did a great job of countering him in the bowl game. I mean, Pettis had nowhere to go. But you watch him return punts on tape. Oh, my goodness. Speed, feel. Now, as a route runner, he uses his speed to his advantage, but he is also not the most precise route runner. He rounds off a lot of routes. He doesn't cut them, but he'll be good for a team. He has Jennard Avery, the linebacker from Memphis. Says he has straight power. Says a lot like James Harrison. Anthony Miller, the wide receiver from Memphis, is on Pete Prisco's list. Says very productive. Austin Corbett, guard at Nevada. Starter at left tackle for 3 seasons. He had to move him to guard in the NFL. Now, Mason Cole of Michigan talks about how he started both the tackle and center at Michigan. The NFL thinks he's a center. I like him because he's got size and he's got really good feet. He moves well. Trey Quinn, wide receiver, SMU. Pete says will be a reliable slot receiver in the NFL. Harrison Phillips, the defensive tackle from Stanford. Pete Prisco says not powerful enough to play on the nose, but would be very good as a 4-3 defensive tackle. Mike White, the quarterback from Western Kentucky. Now, Bill O'Brien had him in the Senior Bowl and really liked him. This guy was at South Florida. And yeah, he bides his time. 3 years, he could be a productive NFL player. Kerryon Johnson, the running back from Auburn. A lot of people felt he was the best player in the SEC last year. 1,391 yards. Pete Prisco says he loves his big play ability. 5 yards a carry, which is 1.1 higher than Hall of Famers, and had 18 rushing touchdowns. Oh, stop laughing. Nyheim Hines, the running back from North Carolina State, speed. Talks about his 4.38 speed. Then he gets to Deshaun Hamilton. He says, isn't a burner, but might be the best route runner in the class. 4.53, so not slow. Calling card is his ability to win with his route running. Spot on. Brian O'Neill, the tackle from Pitt. I really like Brian O'Neill. Actually came to Pitt as a tight end, believe it or not. He's got great feet, long arms. I think whomever picks him is going to get a good one. Aiden Key, the defensive end from LSU. Pete writes, looked like he could be a top 10 pick in 2015. He's had some personal issues. Left the LSU team. Disciplinary problems. But as a player, long, lean. Josie Jewell of Iowa. Now, Josie Jewell of Iowa, I can tell you my opinion is a workman-like blue-collar linebacker. Now, Pete Prisco writes that he did not work out great after the season. But he says he makes plays. They compare him to Zach Thomas. I can see that. Because, you know, Zach Thomas played against Penn State, you know. Zach Thomas was from Texas Tech. Penn State opened the season in 1995. I think it was 95 against Texas Tech, and Zach Thomas was great that day. Prelude of things to come. Josie Jewell's, I agree with that. A lot like Zach Thomas. I'll say this, though. I think Thomas' lateral movement might be a little bit better than Josie Jewell's. Josh Sweat, defensive end, outside linebacker, Florida State. He says true edge rusher. Carlton Davis, DB from Auburn. Says that three-year starter and can play press man coverage. He's got Jerome Baker, the linebacker at Ohio State. I agree with this completely. You know, I've talked about Jerome Baker for 2 years on this show now. Whenever, obviously, Ohio State week has come up. Not like it's been a constant drumbeat here. But for two years, I've talked about Jerome Baker. Okay, you're talking about a guy that is long, athletic. I think he plays the passed decently, but he's a really good run-and-chase linebacker. And Alan Lazard, the wide receiver from Iowa State, is the last guy on here. 6'4", thinks he needs to bulk up a bit, but could be a tight end H-back in the NFL. So that's Pete Prisco's. Got a lot of players on there we've seen, and I can see why he put him there. All right, take a break. Jason Luck and Four coming up. Final half hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Well, I think it's anybody's guess as to what the Cleveland Browns do next Thursday night, or 2 weeks from tonight. 2 weeks. We'll get the thoughts of Jason LaConfora from CBS in the final half hour of the show. Eddie Garcia from Fox Sports, the NHL reporter, tomorrow at 3:35 Monday. We always love having this guy on. Charlie Campbell from Walter Football, the senior draft analyst. Charlie's great to have on. We've had Charlie on many times before, and I'm looking forward to getting him back on again to get his thoughts on the NFL draft. So... Tom Verducci's article, SI.com, is Philadelphia ready to embrace Gabe Kapler? Same story with him as I do in a lot of other things. Look, let's just see how things are around the 4th of July. I think one thing that to me has become obvious about the analytics era, and we talked about Stratomatic the other day. I mean, that was analytics. Look, stats are analytics. We never started out with, let's do batting averages, let's do completion percentage, let's do yards per carry. You know, those are all analytics. Goals against average, that's an analytic. Right? Points per game, that's an analytic. But they're going all in on instinct is not the way to go. Going all in on analytics is not the way to go. It is taking analytics and combining it with your instinct. We're now, in order to allow your instinct to kick in, you now have all the information available that confirms or denies how you feel about something. You can't just operate that way. For example, I don't want to harp too much on Aaron Nola going 68 pitches, but I want to use that as an example. You have to know your personnel. That the third time they go through the order, I don't know, against, say, Justin Verlander, how comfortable are you as a manager? I know I'm very comfortable because guess what? That's Justin Verlander out there. Hey, I know what the analytics say, but guess what? Justin Verlander has told me a 15-year story that I don't need analytics on.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Just one quick Penn State basketball note. Naz Bostic has decided to transfer. No surprise there. Naz, you know, and I've talked to Naz enough over time. I mean, look, he wants to play more. Who doesn't want to play more? And I think he's going to try and seek out a place where he can play more than just the 12 to 17 minutes a game he was getting. I mean, and this will end up being a good move for him. Also, with Tony Carr opting for the NBA draft, those two were very, very close, really good friends. So. All right, very pleased to bring in Jason LaCanfora, NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBS Sports Network, and you can catch him leading up to the draft on Inside College Football Draft Specials on CBS Sports Network. Jason, welcome back to the show. It's a real pleasure to have you with us again.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so Jason, let's get to it. The Cleveland Browns are sitting there at number one, and they're also sitting there at number four. They hold the cards. Now, to you, 2 weeks from today, what do those cards look like?
Well, the first pick is a quarterback. I don't think there's too much question about that. I don't see a trade materializing there. John Dorsey's going to get whichever passer he thinks can shepherd this team for the next 10 to 15 years. I expect that pick to be between Sam Darnold and Josh Allen, and I'm not sure that Dorsey knows in his heart exactly what he's going to do right now. He probably has a pretty good idea, but he's someone who would play his cards very close to the vest. Obviously, the owner would be involved in that decision, but I don't know how much Hugh Jackson is going to have to say about it one way or the other. I mean, he'll have an opinion, but I think John Dorsey's going to follow his convictions here. And, you know, people are connecting dots, and he took Mahomes a year ago in Kansas City, and you know, big, strong-arm kid who makes some mistakes, a bit of a gunslinger, not super-duper accurate, but with enormous upside. And some people would make comparisons to Allen. Dorsey spent a long time in Green Bay under Ron Wolf. Ron Wolf was always drafting quarterbacks, even drafting them when he had them. And he liked guys like Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, who certainly have some gunslinger in them. So we'll see. Sam Darnold's a little safer. At the end of the day, he's going to pick between one of those two players. And then at four, if somebody is desperate to get a quarterback at four, Dorsey's going to listen. His door will be open. Doesn't mean it'll be enough to move him off of Barkley or Chubb. But, you know, if one of those two is already gone and maybe who's there, you know, he loves but isn't totally in love with, then I think if someone pays an extreme premium, which you have to do when you're moving up to get a quarterback, to get to four, to get the second or third quarterback off the board, then, you know, that's a very, very viable option for the Browns.
While I understand that, and I'm not saying this is somebody who's like, you know, I just started watching football the other day. I've been covering this thing around here at Penn State for 40 years. Saquon Barkley's a generational player. I mean, to me, you miss on that one. The Browns are going to miss if they miss on him.
You know, I certainly hear that argument. I've had scouts I know and trust compare him to Barry Sanders, say, he, you know, if he stays healthy, you know, he's a Hall of Famer. He can change your offense. And I understand that. But I think if you look even recently, and maybe he will prove to be exponentially better than Leonard Fournette and exponentially better than Ezekiel Elliott. But look at those two running backs who got picked recently in the top five, and you can look in the second and third rounds of those drafts and find running backs who are pretty close in production and in a lot of cases superior production. I mean, Dorsey last year in Kansas City took a back in the third round who led the NFL in rushing. Now, I understand that Barkley looks like a much better prospect than Kareem Hunt, but I would say this. There's going to be multiple running backs taken on the second day who have, you know, 8 to 10 year careers who are, you know, very viable starters and impact players for a long time. If you don't take Chubb, good luck with another pass rusher who you can absolutely say, okay, this guy is an anchor. There's just no pass rush out there. There's never any in free agency, and there's precious little in this draft. So, and then you'd have got the quarterback premium as well, where people are going to overdraft a quarterback just because it's the only way to get one, you know, pass rushing quarterbacks. So I don't think you can discount those sort of market factors when you obsess where Barkley goes. And even if he slips to 5 or something like that, or 6 or whatever, I don't think people should be flipping out or saying it's the end of the world because certain teams are, you know what I mean? Certain teams are paying a quarterback premium, and certain teams are going to pay a pass rush premium just because of those positions.
Right, exactly right. Because, you know, the Jets, for example, moved up to 3. They're paying the quarterback premium.
Yeah.
I mean, and the pass rush premium I completely get because that's why the Browns went with Myles Garrett last year.
Yes. Yes. And there's even less. I mean, even this, you start talking about guys like Landry, you know, who some people think is the best edge. I mean, I talk to a lot of teams who I know and trust who say, you know, he'll go in the first round because he has to, because 32 of them have to. But, you know, he may project to be just a guy at the next level. You know, I love the kid from Virginia Tech. A lot of people love him. But, I mean, he's 19. I mean, he's super raw. And you know, there's a lot of guesswork involved in that. Davenport played at a really small school, you know, and people don't know how that's going to translate. It's difficult, man. And this draft, there's just not much out there. I mean, I think this kid Sweat from Florida State could end up going in the first round just because there's not much out there. And you got the kid from LSU who, you know, has been thrown off a team or you know, told to stay home for months on end and been suspended and who has all kinds of red flags, but he has some freakish pass rush. You know, he's flashed some freakish pass rush stuff, so he'll probably go pretty high.
Right, and see, that goes down to, you know, over the years you and I have both heard, Jason, the expression, best player available. Well, if you go by best player available and put together a legitimate list, there are a couple of these quarterbacks that are second-round picks and not first.
I'm sorry. Could you repeat that? I'm getting bombarded here after school.
I hear the dog. I hear the baby.
I got two kids asking me if they can go outside, and a dog following me around. I'm sorry.
Okay. Tell the dog to sit and tell the two kids have a good time.
Easier said than done. I can tell them. You don't listen.
Oh, wait. You're talking about a 5 children, 4 grandchildren, and 4 dogs
goodness.
In the house, okay?
Okay, so, I got 3 kids and a dog, so you've got me beat. I need some points.
I got you beat on that. I'll repeat what I asked before or stated before. If we were going by, you and I were to sit there and go, best player available, which is the standard thing we hear all the time. In reality, under best player available in terms of actual ranking, there are actually probably a couple of these quarterbacks that aren't first-round picks.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially if all 6 of the sort of quote-unquote top tier go in the first round, which I think is quite possible, and at least 5 of them are going to. Oh, yeah, I'm with you there entirely. If you're talking about just pure football players and stone cold evaluations, you probably have 3 to 4 running backs in there. In reality, maybe only one goes. You know, a couple of receivers might get taken because there are several teams out there desperate for receivers who don't think their guy will be there in the second round, but if you're just purely grading them, you know, Ridley has warts. I mean, you know, the kid from Maryland, DJ Moore, a lot of scouts tell me they think he's the best wide out in the draft, but he's not a superior size guy, and you know, there's some projecting involved in that as well. So no doubt about it, but you know, there is a need factor, and certain teams especially are just in dire straits at certain position groups, so they're going to push a guy up their board, or they're going to, I won't say rig things, but it is kind of, you know, somehow their evaluations will tend to meet their needs, you know, because that's just how the board's got to look.
Exactly. To me, the mystery team early is the Giants at 2. What's your gut feeling about what they may do? Because they did trade JPP, so... Yeah. Is Bradley Chubb maybe their guy?
If they stay there, and don't take a quarterback, I think they take Chubb. My suspicion has been all along they're not taking a quarterback, but if a certain one is there, you know, if Dorsey does take somebody who they're not interested, like let's say he takes Allen and Allen's not their guy, but then they're sitting there too with a choice between Rosen or Darnold, then I think, you know, things could get interesting. All things being equal, what I think Dave Gettleman's master plan would be is to have somebody try to move up. Maybe somebody moves to like 5 with Denver and then moves all the way to 2. So that he doesn't have to drop back. You know, he's only dropping back to 5. He's not dropping all the way back to 12.
Right.
You know, somebody gets to 10. New England gets to 10 with Oakland and then still has ammunition and really wants Baker Mayfield, and they come all the way to 2. I don't think he'd want to go quite back to 10. But even then, if 4 of the first 5 picks are quarterbacks, then and you're not in that market, then you're really taking, you know, the 5th or 6th player off your board. But his perfect world would be drop back 3 to, you know, a couple of spots, get Chubb at 5 right before he goes to Indianapolis, and pick up a premium of, you know, a future first-round pick or, you know, a couple of 2s along the way. I'm not sure that trade will develop for him. His best option maybe, you know, with the Buffalo Bills, who are at 12. I just don't know that he wants to go back quite that far. My hunch is they're not taking a quarterback, but we're still a ways back. I mean, really, with the draft, the reality is, and why I don't ever do a mock draft until right before the draft, is you don't really start hearing the real information until the week of the draft, because that's when teams come out of their hole. Right now, everybody's setting their own boards. They're making their own evaluations. They're doing their, you know, 30 men. You know, they get the 30 players come in for their trips. And they're doing all that. Then they pop their heads up when that's done. Their board's set. And then you start calling other people and figuring out, you know, who you think they're going to take there. And if my guy's there and yours isn't, you know, what do you think? And that's when word really starts getting out, because you have to tip your hand a little bit if you're trying to set some of these trades up ahead of time.
Give me a couple of guys. Now, look, and it's an inexact thing. I don't care what anybody says. Going from college to the NFL, you're jumping over a canyon to do that. That's why I respect those guys to that level so much. They're able to do it. But give me a couple of guys that you feel really comfortable with, that no matter what team gets them, your gut tells you they're getting a really good player.
Well, I mean, look, I'm not going to pretend that I'm a master evaluator. The conclusions I draw are based off of enough of the small core of guys I really trust who never really steer me wrong. You know, if there's 12 guys in that group and 8 of them really agree on something, you know what I mean? Then I'm going to start banging the drum for that player. These are guys who traditionally have not steered me wrong.
I'm the same way. Jason. If there's certain people I trust that they tell me, then that kind of tells me that's the direction to think.
Yeah, because I'm not watching film, and I'm not pretending I'm watching film. But Nelson, the guard from Notre Dame, enough people have said the word Hall of Fame. Like, you know, potential Hall of Famer. Like, he's that good. He's that clean. Like, he comes in, he's the leader. He's one of the alphas on your offensive line. He's going to help you road grade. Like, not a great pass protector. He seems can't miss no matter where he goes. I think Barkley is in that same category. I think Chubb is probably in that category. You know, I think Minka Fitzpatrick just being such a... And he's not a Swiss Army knife the way the kid from Michigan was a Swiss Army knife last year. Like, this is a freak of nature athletically with the size. You know what I mean? Who probably projects best as a ball-hawking free safety, which there aren't a whole lot of those in this draft, but you know he could play corner. You could throw him in the slot if you had to. I tend to think... I know Alabama DBs have struggled at the next level, and if you kind of start... If you do a little, you know, research on that, but I think that kid is pretty special. I do think that this kid Edmonds, I mean, his dad was an NFLer. He's got another brother in the draft who's about to go in the NFL. I mean, this kid was, you know, he's from that Tidewater area down there that just produces so many athletes, and this kid's been dominant in his age group all the way through. It dominates college football at 19. I just have a feeling he's gonna be really special. At the next level. May take a year or two, but time's obviously on his side. There's maybe a couple others. I mean, those are some of the guys who sort of jump out. I don't know that there's more than 8 of them. I mean, the guys I talk to believe, you know, truly, if you just stop the first round after most teams had first round grades done, you'd be stopping this draft around 19 or 20, you know?
Yeah.
But obviously 32 of them are going to go. So if we're talking about 20, you know, kids who really deserve a first round grade, then there's probably 6 to 8, you know, who are the real blue chippers, and I think the 5 or 6 kids I mentioned are probably comprise a decent amount of that group.
And you and I know the premium put on quarterbacks, the premium put on edge rushers. I think the premium put on a left tackle really high. That's the interesting part about Nelson. There's usually not a high premium, quote, put on guards.
Well, but if this is the thing, though, now, if you look at free agency in the NFL the last couple of years, and especially this year where Norwell, a former undrafted guy, he's making $30 million guaranteed in the first 2 years with his deal with Jacksonville. That's basically a 2-year, $30 million deal. Right? So 15 a year. Nate Solder got 15 a year to go be a left tackle. This guy's a guard. So he's got the first 2 years of the deal, he's got the same money as Solder, same guarantees, everything across the board. So when guards are getting that in free agency, and we've seen the center market jump in recent years as well, you know, and Dallas is going to have to reset that market with their center, it's only a matter of time, that now it's to the point where, well, hell, what's the, you know, almost what's the difference? I mean, we're going to have to pay every position group along the offensive line, and you got, you know, guards making 15 a year on a short term of their deal. Then I think that these guys who have just gone through that in free agency say, you know what, I probably need to just draft a guy.
Jason Lockenfour is the NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBS Sports Network. You can catch him leading up to the draft on Inside College Football Draft Specials on CBS Sports Network. My best to the kids, my best to the dog, my best to you. Thanks so much.
Well, if you watch those draft specials, don't listen too closely because there'll probably be a knucklehead yelling behind me, like both from upstairs or the playroom next door. So, I got that going.
I love it. Hey, you do awesome work. I really enjoy the conversation a lot. Thanks for all the information, Jason.
My pleasure. Thank you. Have a great day. Thanks.
Jason LaConfora joining us from CBS Sports. Again, NFL insider for CBS Sports, CBS Sports Network. You can catch him leading up to the draft on Inside College Football Draft Specials on CBS Sports Network. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
We upgrade all the time.
My computer.
My TV.
My phone.
Isn't it time you upgraded your vehicle?
Upgrade your trade now at Sunbury Motors Kia.
Wanna see you in Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia.
It's the first annual Upgrade Your Trade event. Now is the time because SMC is making it easier than ever with above market value for your trade and 0% financing for up to 75 months on 2018 Kia Fortes, Optimus, Sportages, and Serenos. 0% for 66 months on 2018 Kia Souls and Sedonas. And 0% for 60 months on 2018 Kia Rios and Niros. And all include Kia's 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. Plus, there's over 25 Kia certified pre-owned vehicles on the lot, priced to move. It's the first annual Upgrade Your Trade event at Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Financing offers available to qualified buyers through KMF financing. New offer excludes Kia Stinger and Cadenza. Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see Taylor or go to Kia.com.
Well, this has been a fun show today. Jason LaConfora joining us today. And I think also what was fun for me was that segment we did on Cale Sanderson. You know, he brings in people who want to be champions, but, you know, the want to be is like, I want to be, okay? But part of wanting to be is wanting to put in everything you have to get there, okay? I want to be there because I want to get up at 5 a.m. and run. I want to be a champion because I want to get into the weight room at 6. I want to be because I'm going to take care of my classwork. I want to be because, okay, I'm going to spend the extra time. I need, you know, I'm having trouble with this move. I want to be great, so I'm going to work to perfect it. I want to work on that counter because it's hurt me before and it's never going to hurt me again. Yeah, there's a lot of time unseen by virtually everyone outside of a program that is the true want that then leads up to the part you do see. What has made Trace McSorley great? All that film work he's done because he wants to be good. He wants to be able to break it down. Hey, all that time he spent in the weight room, he wants to be strong and tough. All the time he's put in with a speed coach because he wants to be quicker. Because he wants to win. Those are all elements he needs because he wants to win. I told the story on the Mississippi State broadcast at Madison Square Garden about being at the practice gym on Saturday before that game. And Tony Carr was in there, and so was John Hara. John Hara was the only two in the gym at the time. John Hara was working on free throws. You notice how John Hara missed only one free throw in the month of March? One. And Tony Carr was working on his free throws because that had slumped a bit, and he was going around the horn. Three-point shot, three-point shot, three-point shot, three-point shot. And guess what? It came back to him in New York. Three-point shot and free throws. And you know what? That's because he wanted to. He wanted to be great. He wanted to win. And he knew that part of the want was the part that nobody saw. Now, I saw it because I got to go. Okay? It's that want. It's not that, oh, we're Shikellamy. We can't stand Sealance Grove. They're our rival. All right, that's great for the fans. It gets more people out. There's no doubt about that. But the actual winning of the game? So winning of the game is the want. Hey, it's, and that's the other part, too. If you have personal pride in yourself in anything, I don't care if you're Tom over at Sunbury Motors or if you're Adam Purdy, right? Your Corey over at Brewers Outlet. You know, why are they successful all the time? Because they want it badly. Tom wants to have the best dealership out there. Adam wants to be the best insurance agency out there. Corey wants the best beverage center out there. They want that. So they're working all the time. Right, it's not just in sports. They're working all the time to figure out how can they be better because of the want. Why do I do this? Because I want to be the best I can be. That it's not rivalry.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.